So, I mean, that guided meditation was quite comprehensive, Randy. Thank you. I mean, he took us from the beginning to the end. And so this is our lesson 9, and let me remind you that you have everything you need to start your daily practice or start a practice. So tonight what I'm going to do is bring together the 4 foundations of mindfulness that we've been talking about individually. And the 4 foundations of mindfulness covers it all. It is our curriculum. Chan Cha said, chickens can sit on their nest. Chickens can sit, thank you, can sit on their nest all day long, but it doesn't mean they're meditating. So just a reminder that we are in a very, very important part of our practice, but this is just the beginning. Because once we start being quiet and still, and we follow our breath and develop enough concentration, then we're going to see. We're going to see directly exactly what's going on inside. And that's living. That's direct experientially living your life. So the 4 foundations of mindfulness, again, is the curriculum, because it says, reminds us to be mindful of the body. Mindfulness of the body. And you think, well, you know, that seems pretty simple. But not when we start really, really diving into things about our body that we had at one time no idea that was even there. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of sensations that can morph to feelings, and then with extreme feelings, strong feelings go into emotions. Mindfulness of thoughts, along with mindfulness of the mind and mind states where we kind of cluster our thinking together and create a paradigm or a something of nonsense, mostly, usually nonsense. And now we have an opportunity to see exactly what we're saying to ourselves and see if it's true. So in the mindfulness of thoughts, the mind is fully attending to what's happening, to what we're doing, and to the space that we're moving through. And that might seem trivial, except for the annoying fact that we so often just veer not into the present moment, but into our minds. It's where we live our lives most of the time or much of the time. And that's not real living. It's conceptualizing life. It's not experiencing life. And so we're beginning to see the difference in there. So we find ourselves in our heads conceptualizing, and we watch ourselves do that. We witness it. We recognize it. And the power The transformation comes with just recognizing. That's why we can say it's so simple. Because recognizing what's going on places us immediately into the experience of 100% living in the body. So mindfulness of our breathing encourages the concentration along with being still and quiet and enabling us to see what's happening with a lot more clarity. It doesn't seem like that's possible in our daily awakening life. And, of course, mindfulness of our whole body is a big deal. And we will be continuing with our practice, scanning like Randy took us through, either from the toe to the head or the head to the toe. And until as long as it takes, and I don't think, I've practiced for a long time, the scanning is still very important to me because, again, I'm placing myself deliberately, quite consciously, into the mind and body that I've been given that I don't know a whole lot about until I start maybe meditating. So mindfulness of the body is where all of our curriculum is. So getting to know what it feels like to have a body and continuing that feeling of, oh, there's a body. And so I'm ahead of myself. Because I want to say something else before I get into mindfulness of the body. We can notice or name whatever comes up in our practice. That's a tool that's important because when we name it, there's that sense of we don't own it. We don't, it's not us, but it's there. We're in charge of managing it because all of this phenomena can have a life of its own. So as we're practicing and we're beginning to see what's going on inside, it's just very important to be clear about it. And what we find is that our breath, or the sensation, we leave the mindfulness of the sensation of the breath. We do it constantly. At one time I thought, oh my goodness, every time that happened, I'm not meditating. That is meditation, okay? So don't beat yourself up. Oh, I didn't stay with my breath. No. It's that process of forgetting and then moving back into the presence. Returning again and again and again, forever and amen. Achan Buddhadasa says, do not do anything. Now we're getting into the body. Do not do anything that takes you away from the body. Now, that's profound. Don't do anything that takes you away from your body. Well, I wasn't in contact with the whole body for a long, long time. So that's how important it is. The body lives in the present moment. And when we are aware of the body, we are connected with present present moment living, where life is experienced, not concocted by our minds or have opinions about the life. So it is in the body that it's that one place where we can see reality, see the truth, what is actually happening. So awareness of the body is our gateway into the truth of what is, what's actually happening. And our body is the ideal mirror for discovering the Buddha's great truths of life is full of suffering. That is something that is to be known. One of our teachers, when he heard that life was full of suffering, he cried because he thought something was wrong when he suffered. He thought he was doing something wrong. So life is full of suffering, and that everything is changing constantly, faster than fast. And then that's not who we are. We are not these changing phenomena. We're something much more vast than that, and that's where we're heading. So who am I? So our meditation practice of emphasizing body, awareness, and meditation will show us that is, it is an effective practice. And that it'll show us that we're in our minds too much. But again, that's good when we notice that. That's the practice when we notice it. Oh, I'm in my mind. And with the practice, especially a daily practice, that becomes easier to notice, to recognize, to allow. And we become interested in it because, well, for me, it was a new topic. So Gil Fronsdale says, we are embodied consciousness. He's the Vipassana teacher. It greatly limits your developing wisdom if you fail to include the body in your meditation. Everything registers in the body. And then the Buddha says, if the body is not cultivated, the mind cannot be cultivated. If the body is cultivated, then the mind can be cultivated. So how important is it? And the Buddha continues, there is one thing when cultivated and regularly practiced leads to deep spiritual intention. He says to peace, to mindfulness, and clear comprehension, to a vision and knowledge, to a happy life of here and now that can be found nowhere else. Oh, he didn't say that. I said that. To the culmination of wisdom and awakening. And he says, what is that one thing? It is mindfulness centered on the body. So the poet Donna Falls says, trust the energy that courses through you. Then take surrender even deeper. Be the energy. Don't push anything away. Follow each sensation back to its source in vastness and pure presence. Wow. So mindfulness of the body will lead us to noticing the second foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness of sensations. We're full of sensations. We are vibrating. And mindfulness and sensations morph into feelings. And we have this relationship with our feelings that causes a whole lot of suffering because we don't understand the nature of feelings that can morph even into strong emotions. But it's here, right here at the noticing these feelings that we are having a feeling tone, and it's important to notice, of like and not liking and not really caring one way or the other, or it being neutral. And as I said last week, that's the place where we can end or not start our suffering. Because the contemplation of feelings leads us into the second foundation of feelings that shine the light of awareness on all our tendencies, all our habits, all our reactions. We want to see them. We don't want to run away with them, away from them or ignore them. It replaces the ignorance of automatic reaction with the knowledge of just clear recognition. Again, it's recognizing how could it be so simple, and allowing and becoming interested in it as if it is the most important thing in our lives. So we train ourselves not to ignore the impact of the affected dimension of experience. It's crucial. Mindfulness of body, mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of emotions, mindfulness of the mind, of thoughts, of mind states, what we're saying to ourselves. And so we go to the third foundation of thoughts of the mind. And many of us have heard this before, but I don't get tired of reading it or hearing it, because Bhante Ji says it better than anyone on what we're dealing with the mind, and it's called crazy mind. And he says, somewhere in this process, you will come face to face with a sudden and shocking realization that you are completely crazy. Your mind is a shrinking, gibbering madhouse on wheels, barreling pell-mell down the hill, utterly out of control. No problem. You are not crazier than you were yesterday. It has always been this way, and you just never noticed. You are also no crazier than everybody else around you. That's nice to know. And the only real difference is that you have confronted the situation, and they have not. So we're paying attention to our lives. So we begin to see what is our relationship with our mind. Because we hear the teaching say it's a great servant, but an awful master. And we all know in the West how we've been conditioned to just about worship the mind. But as we observe our thoughts and question our beliefs about these thoughts, we come to another understanding that while thinking, planning, and remembering are vital to our lives, they're not certain and they're unreliable. And that's a huge insight. More so than we've ever believed possible. Our thoughts are always more temporary and one-sided than we know. Why? Because we have not studied the nature of thoughts. And we are conditioned to believe them. But questioning our thoughts is at the heart of the Buddhist practice. Is what we believe solid and certain? And we find that that's not true. And we find that in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which one part is looking at our mind states, that we have within us all kinds of cluster of thoughts that we have carried with us, some of them since childhood, and we haven't questioned them. Why? Well, we didn't know that we could, and we didn't know that we should. So when we believe our own thoughts and feelings, we become fundamentalist. Fundamentalist. There can be fundamentalist Buddhists, scientists, psychologists, but no matter how strongly we believe our perspective, it's only one point of view. Buddha says that we just go around annoying each other with our opinions. Is that not true? And in our personal relationships, that's really obvious. A relationship matures when, listen to this, a relationship matures when each partner grants the possibility that the other may be right. Even if we don't believe it. So most of our mental suffering comes from how tightly we hold on to these beliefs and thoughts and perspectives that we just hang out constantly with without much effort to get to know them. So in Buddhist training, our thoughts are deconstructed. The entire structure is dismantled. Plank by plank. There's lots to do now that we know how to meditate. And when we are bothered by our thinking, Buddhist psychology says, ask the question, is it really true? Is it really true? And if we listen from the heart and we begin to listen, we begin to perceive, we begin to live through the heart, that is not the mind, a whole different perspective than just living through the mind. We will see how much trouble comes from believing stories that may not ever be true. Achan Cha said, you have so many views and opinions. What's good and bad, right and wrong about how things should be? He says you cling to your views and suffer so, so much. And they are only views. We don't understand the true nature of views in our opinions. So we're thinking they're more than they are. So we learn to observe how words and images arise and then vanish, leaving no trace. And these are all phenomena that all human beings are subject to. And we haven't studied them. And so that's what meditation does. We come to know the deepest truth for ourselves. That which has been hidden will be seen. So get ready. Whether you want it to happen or not. And I can understand why people stay off the cushion. Because truth sometimes is very difficult to face. But it is through the pain that the pain is cured. So we have to face ourselves. Some believe that if we don't face ourselves now while we're breathing, as we're dying, we'll be facing it. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard it several times. I kind of intuit that it is, and that's why I want to get on with it. I don't want to be dying and, you know, and dealing with something that I can deal with right now. I want the whole truth now. So it shifts us. It shifts us in a way that is that with time enables more happiness, because truth brings happiness. Delusion is hell. Any of the delusion is hell. So we can live our lives in harmony, and there's a right effort. It's not the only effort, but this effort has been tried and true, and I have much, much faith in it, not blind faith, but faith from actually practicing and seeing directly for myself the many things that the Buddha teaches. And that's why the teachings is so, 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 so important. Otherwise, we'll be sitting around like hens. Because the peace and quiet and stillness feels good. But it can also be a trap. And sooner or later, it's not going to last. Because things are going to start coming up. If we're serious about this practice. So with that, I'll stop. Thank you. Randy will come over.